Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White always does magnificent things with us, and he's back again on a Thursday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning. Day three of the Bull.
Day three. Have you ever been to the Bull and done the carnival thing?
I'm going to be honest with you and say I haven't.
Well, you don't have to think that that's a bad thing.
Well, it is a bad thing because I would have liked to have been able to go, but I just haven't been able to for a variety of different reasons. So I've had a horse that's run at the Warrnambool Carnival.
Have you? That must have been a while ago.
It was a long time ago, before I had children and houses and all that sort of stuff.
That's a long, long time
One
ago.
House. Houses? At a time.
You've got lots of houses, have you? You're one of those guys.
It ran second. I ran second at one of the support races. Did you know that Mark Stevens was part of a horse that won on day one of the carnival?
Was he?
Yeah. New York.
On New York Baby?
Yeah.
I did see him tweet something about that.
Yeah.
It's to Troy Corston's horse.
Yeah, that's right.
I love Troy.
So there's a crew that like to frequent the Harp Hotel in Kew.
Magnificent venue.
Yeah. So, I don't think Steve's ever had a horse. And he has a horse. It's been a big time for Steve, obviously.
Well, that was the 2-year-old race, the big Super Vobis bonus race.
It was.
Yeah,
it was about 85,000 to the winner.
It was a race worth winning.
Yeah, there might be 85,000 in the horse, but
doesn't matter.
He had a winner.
Considering his recent run of ill health, then that is a great
absolutely
return to form for Steve. He's out on the TV too. I've noticed he's more prominent on the television this week. He's been talking a lot on the box to Tim. That's right, Tim. The AFL Today have said, and that's how he starts most of his things. He crosses to Channel 7 News.
Yeah, he's back.
He's back in a big way and winning races at the Bull, which is fantastic. I've never been to the Bull either for the 3-day carnival, but it's something we might just need to take a week off 1 year, you and I, and just go and hang out at the Bull. Although I've got a feeling you might be in bed a bit earlier than me.
Why is that?
Well, you're not exactly sort of socialite party animal. You're not really that sort of guy.
That's very nice.
Well, am I wrong?
No. Depends. So I know that the boys were heading off in a limousine.
Now, hang on a second. I saw a bit of this last night. Falgate, Stewart, the Hornet, Matty Nevitt. I didn't see any Gareth activity. I don't know where Gareth was. And I reckon there was another familiar voice in that limousine chat. Someone in the background, there's a familiar voice. I don't know who it was.
Right.
But there's another familiar voice.
So not familiar enough for you to know. But
well,
familiar.
No, it's familiar enough to certainly know the sound of it, but not place it.
Right.
Certainly with, there's only a couple of words you could hear in the background. I can't quite work out who it was. But they were off to the Dogs afterwards, the Warrnambool Cup, last night, the Greyhounds. After the big day at the track. How do you reckon? In the limo with champagnes a-popping.
Yes, I did see.
Now, I don't know how that's going to end up. 8:30 today. Remember the year? We were talking about this before. Remember a couple of years ago when Blue Eyes was doing his show from the Bull? Now, you can catch it from 8:30 this morning on Racing Pulse, maybe. And he had a really husky voice.
Yes, that's right. And he said it was
And he blamed
roadworks.
The roadworks at the front of the
that's
motel.
Right. That's right.
I have come to the conclusion that was a fabrication of the truth. Because I reckon it might have been the Thursday morning too after he'd been to the Dogs on the Wednesday night. I've just put it all together. He's a disgrace, that man.
That's right. Roadworks.
Roadworks. And we fell for it.
Yes, we did. We didn't think it was roadworks.
So but I want to know how they go at 8:30 this morning. I'll be very, very keen to work out, to find out if, in fact, they start on time. I would suggest Gareth Horn needs to be on standby.
Well, I think Gareth may have had a big night as well for different reasons. So, yes.
We love Tigalong Tonk. We know that.
He does.
So he's probably celebrating the victory. Speaking of celebrating the victory and the Bull, did you see the gallery yesterday? What a story. You talk about racing pulling up stories, and unlike any other sport.
Well, it's true.
Well, yesterday was another example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Brett Scott was kicked in a coma a couple of months ago and trained the winner of the gallery yesterday. Never won it as the jockey himself, but found himself training the winner of the gallery yesterday. It's unbelievable. what racing throws up.
Absolutely. It just continually does it. There's no other sport like it that can have such amazing stories. And that horse yesterday was a pretty good price too. And after it crossed the line, you think, oh, that's the one you had to be on. That was the story. And it paid, was about 20 to 1.
Yeah, $17, I think it was.
Yeah.
The Statesman, it's an amazing story. I must admit, I didn't see it live, but I saw some Twitter activity on the back of it and watched the replay and all the ensuing celebrations. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. What a moment for Brett Scott. And another great moment for racing.
Mm.
They're those stories that you just can't script.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There's some big news in footy yesterday. The Christian Petracca story, or the signing, I guess, was sort of mooted the night before that it was about to be done, if not done.
Tommy Morris was all over that.
The length of the contract, the amount of money, have Melbourne done the right thing, do you think, Harv?
I hate 7-year deals, I must admit. I'm just philosophically opposed to 10 years of that long, that length. Money, $1 million a year, or 900 a year, does that average it out somewhere?
Well, I think it might have been a bit more.
Was it?
Yeah.
What was the term? I thought it was 6.5 or 7.
Oh, I think everyone's guessing when they start, you know, reporting that sort of stuff. But I think it was more likely to be high than low from that sort of 900 mark.
So $1 million a year, let's just say it's $1 million a year. That's a lot, but he's a match winner and in the top 5 players in the competition.
You think he's that good now?
I think he's fabulous, yep. He's impact every single week. So he doesn't have down weeks anymore. And there'll be one every now and then that will pop up through a season of 22 weeks, as you'd imagine. But I think he's legit. He's legit, Christian Petracca.
Mm.
Yeah, I pay him what you need to pay him because he's a match winner. He's midfield, forward, kicks goals, uses the footy really well, strong as a bull. Like, he's got so much going on, it's not funny. And I think it's worth the money. I hate the term, the 7-year term. I think that's stupid. Personally, but that's, you know, you got to lock in your superstars to take them away from possibilities of other clubs coming and poaching them. So I get it from that perspective. And if I'm Melbourne, I want a 7-year deal. But oh, I don't know. I just think that's fraught with disaster, 7-year deals. The whole Brody Grundy thing.
Yeah.
I just don't like 7-year deals. Give me four or five max. I reckon 4 max is the best term. 7's quite extraordinary.
So did Sydney do the right thing by putting Lance Franklin on a 9?
Well, that's as it turns out, probably no, because they haven't got bang for their buck in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
turns out probably no. That was an exceptional circumstance to get him out of Melbourne. Yeah, I mean, turns out no, because they haven't got bang for their buck.
Yeah,
in terms of on-field performances the last couple of years, he's been fabulous for Sydney. Don't get me wrong. But he could have done that twice with two 4-year deals.
I think I know I asked the question, but I think Franklin's a different scenario because it's almost as much as, we were talking about this with Taylor Harris yesterday, it's almost the brand as much as it is the football. The difference between Taylor Harris and Lance Franklin is that Lance Franklin's done it for a long time on the field.
Yeah.
And so the playing comes first. So, and in the Sydney market, I think he's been... I actually think he has been terrific value for money for Sydney, and I actually think that's been a good deal. But, yeah, the Petracca one's interesting. I mean, Grundy, it's still very early on in his new... I mean, he might come good again. Who knows?
Yeah, and it's certainly not writing him off.
But this is the thing with Grundy, Harf, and this is a little bit to do with this long-term contract. Grundy's not playing poor football, but I think we judge Grundy harsher now he's on that big deal than we did before he was on that big deal. Do you think?
Well, I think that some people do. Yep. Absolutely. If you are a big money player, you get scrutiny much more forensically than other players.
Yes.
And that's warranted because the more you get paid, the better you should be.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward correlation.
Because more impact you're having on your own list and your ability to afford other players.
Yeah. So I understand that. I think most people would accept that. That if you're on the big bucks, then more is expected because that's like any job. You get paid more, you're expected to do bigger things, more things. So footy's no different. Sport's no different to that. I understand absolutely that Brody would get judged differently from people because of the salary he earns.
Mm.
Yep, no doubt.
We might talk a little bit later on about the other deals because some happened. Toby Green. Some haven't happened yet.
Toby Green is a huge result for the
Sharks. Yeah, no, I agree. And I know it was only a contract extension. He was locked up for a couple of years, but I do think it still is significant. I want to talk about that later. Marcus Harris isn't far away from joining us. Do we talk about Stuart McGill now? Or do we wait?
Well, I don't know.
Or how do we talk
about
it? I
don't know where to go with the Stuart McGill story. So he gets kidnapped and held for ransom a couple of weeks ago. And it turns out his partner's brother gets...
Was one of four.
Was one of four who was arrested for...
Yeah.
For being involved in the matter.
And apparently he hid in a motel for a week, Stuart McGill, because he was worried about repercussions.
I don't understand how that happens. Very rarely does a random person get kidnapped for no particular reason. There's a lot more. This has got Robert Ellerby written over it.
A good friend of mine actually texted me yesterday and said, this is the Robert Ellerby story of cricket.
Yeah. Well, that's what all the socials were saying. It's very funny. It's the first thing I thought of yesterday, because we just finished breakfast when the story sort of broke yesterday morning. And I thought, what the hell has happened here? And you think it's a bit of a joke and someone's playing a bit of a prank on him. And you work out later on the afternoon that there's four people involved and his partner's brother's in it. And you think, bloody hell.
Organised crime.
What has happened here? And we laugh because of the situation, not at the what's happened to Stewie. But it's quite remarkable. I don't know where to go with that story.
No.
I don't know what to talk about, apart from the fact it's most unusual.
Who was Stuart McGill's former wife?
Rachel Friend.
Who played?
Someone in Neighbours.
Bronwyn. And who was Bronwyn attached to in Neighbours?
Henry.
Correct.
Yes.
Very good.
Craig McLaughlin, who you'll see.
Who's also in the news.
Who you'll see on Channel 7 very soon.
That's right.
With an expose. Oh, the world's a mad place. The world is a mad place. Hey, Marcus Harris. Right. He is some sort of cricketer. We love him here in the Breakfast Club. And the other day he was announced as the Bill Laurie medalist for Cricket Victoria Awards, which, funnily enough, didn't have any ceremony. It was just a sort of an online sort of here you go sort of thing.
Mm.
We'll talk about that shortly as well. But he's busy at the moment playing cricket across the globe. But he was 695 runs in at an average of 63 throughout the Shield season. Two centuries as well. A worthy recipient of the Bill Laurie Award for season 2020-21. And he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. How are you?
We are well, mate. Just for our listeners out there, where do we find you currently?
I am in Leicester.
Leicester, playing cricket for Leicestershire.
Yes, I am.
Rightio.
We got a game starting tomorrow.
How many games have you played so far?
I've played two so far. And we've had two disappointing losses, but it's been pretty good to be back out on the park. And I don't know if anyone follows county cricket. You've played quite a lot of cricket in, so we got another game starting tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that.
I know we've got the Bill Laurie thing to talk about as well, but the county cricket seasons and the opportunity to play county cricket was such a strong pull for a lot of cricketers back in the old days, Marcus, but these days there's not too many that go across. I mean, there's a few that sort of pop in and say good day and get involved in it, but it is that lifestyle of pretty much being, it's cricket almost 24/7, isn't it? How do you like that?
Yeah, it's my first season of playing county cricket, but obviously with increased international schedules these days, it's hard for guys to commit to full seasons like they used to be able to back probably 15, 20 years ago. But I know when the opportunity came up for me to come over and play county cricket, it was almost too good to refuse in the aspect of having the opportunity to keep playing throughout the winter. And with COVID, it's obviously tough with family and stuff like that, but luckily I've got a very understanding partner and very supportive partner, so she encouraged me to do it. And just with the position I'm in as a cricketer and where my career is, I think the opportunity to keep playing throughout the winter was something I had to take up.
Are you tired just mentally because of the amount of cricket you played, or are you relatively fresh because it's a different environment?
I actually feel really good, Whitey, to be fair. When I came over, I had to do 5 or 6 days quarantine just in my flat in Leicester. So that was just a good little probably period of a week where I could just sit and relax and switch off a little bit. And I know in the past, if I've just had a few days where I can just get myself together and gather my thoughts with that, recharges my batteries a bit. So I've actually felt really good in the first two games that I've played.
we were talking about you yesterday because news came through that you won the award, and we were talking about how it was a terrific achievement considering you've kind of renovated your game. And within that time, you've got yourself back into the Test team and you've won the Bill Laurie Award and you've averaged nearly 70 in Shield cricket. It's been quite a roller coaster last 12 months or so.
Yeah, it was a strange season last season. It sort of felt like, till about February, it didn't feel like I really played that much cricket. Then all of a sudden, we played a lot in the back end of the season. So, and I went through some technical changes throughout the summer and throughout the pre-season. And that's obviously, it's going to keep being an evolution as I keep going. But I know I ended up with 690-odd runs the season, but I sort of felt like I probably left a couple hundred out there. So I was hungry and eager to keep playing, so that's why it's fortunate enough I could come over here and play county cricket.
Yeah, so I would imagine that this has come at the perfect time. I talked about how you might be tired because of the amount of cricket you played last summer, but with those technique changes to test it in English conditions, this is almost perfect.
Yeah, it is, and, you know, last time I came over here, especially in the Ashes, I struggled a little bit, so I knew that when I'd finished that Ashes series, I thought if I get an opportunity to come play county cricket, it's just something I have to do. So, and, yeah, with the ball moving so much, it does test your technique. So to be over here and working on it, you know, working in the nets a lot and playing a lot of cricket, I can only see it as being beneficial to my game.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's a real positive. Coming into an Ashes year as well, the more cricket you play, the better. And just on the Shield season, how did you, because it was so disjointed at the start, and then you had the breakthrough of the Big Bash, and then come back late and you play forever in the back end, as you said before, Marcus. How did you find that format, that system of the or calendar of the Shield season?
Oh, well, I think, to be fair and credit to Cricket Australia and the ACA, they did their best just to get a Shield season away. I know.
Yeah.
In hindsight now, you probably think it could have been done differently, but I remember looking back probably 12 months ago now, like to today, we were worried about even having a job or playing cricket at all. So to get all the cricket played was good. You know, it was only 8 games, but it was definitely better than nothing. So it was a bit disjointed. Obviously, the weather in the eastern states was pretty poor throughout the summer, so I know we finished down towards the bottom of the ladder, but I think we're probably one win away from being in the top two. So,
yep.
From a Victorian aspect, it was a different season, but was also, you know, a good opportunity for a few young blokes to come through and have a chance of playing Shield cricket and proving themselves.
Yeah, and whilst we're celebrating your excellence with the Bill Laurie Award the other night at Cricket Victoria Awards, what did you make of the year? How do you assess the year and the next generation of Victorian cricketers coming through?
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, you very quickly go from being one of the young blokes to one of the old blokes. I feel like that's happened to me in the last year and a half. I've sort of always been the youngest bloke in a group, and then all of a sudden I'm one of the older guys now. But we've obviously still got a very good core group of players at Victoria, experienced core. But now, like you saw this season, we had, you know, a guy like Mitch Perry play his first full season and went really well. Will Sutherland, Toddy Murphy, you know, Jakey Fraser-McGurk played a bit. Macca Harvey played a bit, so you know, and a few other boys. So that was good. And John O'Merlo obviously came through well at the end of the season. So I think that will hold us in good stead going forward. I think, like you've seen with other teams like Queensland and stuff like that, that have been able to not so much rebuild but give young blokes a crack, you can sort of turn it around pretty quickly and start winning Shields again pretty quickly. So I'm hoping we can give it a nudge next season.
So do you watch the Shield final? Are you one of those guys that watches it and thinks, bloody hell, I wish that was us? Or do you not put it there, not even bother watching it because you want to be there?
I watched, obviously I was in England, but I watched the first couple of overs of Josh Hazlewood and Mitch Stark bowl, and the wicket was crap, so I turned it off.
That's fair enough. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. Manus held up all right on it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Good luck bowling him on a wicket like that.
Yeah. Chris Rogers and the impact he's had on you, Marcus, I know that he spent a fair bit of time with you, particularly at the start of the summer, and he was your coach. first year, and look, I mean, the season wasn't poor. You were just a victim of circumstances with games that couldn't get finished because of a bad wicket or bad weather, really. But how do you think he went and the impact that he's had on you?
Yeah, Buck was good. Like you said, it was a strange season for him, obviously coming in a month before the season started. Yep. And then, you know, pretty much our three-week build-up in Adelaide, he could only see two or three players. So, and like you said, you know, we got on the wrong end of some stuff with the weather and stuff like that. So I know that Buck's had a close relationship with a lot of the young boys through the academy up at Cricket Australia. So he knew them quite well and knows them quite well. So that should hold them in good stead for this winter.
Now, a great weekend for Australian beach volleyball. The World Cup event in Cancun, Mexico, taken out by our women's pairs. Unbelievable. Taliqua Clancy's part of that, and she joins us on the line. Taliqua, good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, where are you at the moment? Are you still over there or are you back home?
I officially arrived back home, so I'm officially started my day one of quarantine in Sydney.
Oh, no. How long you got?
A beautiful 4:30 a.m. start for me.
So is that a full 14 days?
Yeah, a full 14 days.
Oh, no. No, that's a setback.
I'm a bit scared.
Is it worth winning World Cup events in Cancun, Mexico, when you've got to sit in your hotel for 14 days?
Definitely has put things on a high, which is really good. It was pretty incredible. We actually had a full 3 weeks in Cancun, and it was a little bubble, a little hub. It was amazing, as you can imagine. It was in Cancun. So our first two events didn't go as well as what we'd like, but we finished on a great high. So, yeah, I'm okay with the quarantine.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And I imagine being in really good form in the build-up to an Olympic campaign sort of gets the adrenaline flowing. Do you feel pretty confident about what might lie ahead in Tokyo under 80 days' time?
Yeah, definitely. It was really tough because last year our whole world tour got completely cancelled, so we had no tournament. So this was our first time, you know, to get back and see our competition and see how they're going. And it was just really great that we quickly found that form. And so from now, we won't play another tournament for another 6 weeks. So it's just really great to get the win and to know that, you know, our preparation is going well, even though we aren't competing all the time. So, yeah, definitely excited for Tokyo. And I think being in that bubble goes to show how we can run really great tournaments and high-level tournaments with that COVID safety.
So what was rusty when you're not competing as much as you'd like to be? What was things that came, took a while to sort of get back?
I think it's definitely the nerves and, like, the high-level pace of the game. You just can't replicate that in a training environment. We do our best and we try to get boys a lot to really get that great high level of volleyball, but you can't replicate those feelings and emotions that come along. You can't replicate that.
Time to talk some hoops on The Breakfast Club. The throwdown this weekend between South East Melbourne Phoenix and Melbourne United in the NBL will be one of the highlight attractions across the sporting globe. Don't you worry about that. And the coach of the Phoenix, Simon Mitchell, is ready to roll, I'm sure. Good morning, Simon.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Great to have you with us. Now, the throwdown is a very exciting event in Melbourne sport, let alone Melbourne basketball at the moment. Is there a bigger build-up to this game than other games in the NBL season, or is it just one of the next games on the calendar?
Oh, I think the classic line would be to say it's just another game, we take it 1 week at a time, blah, blah, blah. But I think there's always a genuine excitement about taking on the crosstown rival, and it certainly fuels the guys a little higher.
And just they lost last night, obviously, against Perth, which was a bit of a setback, that 11-game winning streak. How much attention do you pay to those games live, or do you do more stuff on review through video analysis?
No, at home with the notepad and pen. And, we'll go through that game again this morning. And then obviously, we've already gone through our games with them. So, yeah, no, it's not on the night. We don't go in there. But, we certainly do watch it on the video and take a lot of information. You know, Perth were fantastic last night. But I think Melbourne probably weren't at their best either. So it was just one of those games, and they happened during the course of the season.
Yep. Are you happy with where you guys are placed at the moment, sitting fourth on the ladder? So you're inside the finals calculations at the moment, with a pretty good run home too, just by the way. You've got the Breakers, the Taipans, the Bullets all twice, and Melbourne United twice as well. So 8 games, 4 opponents. You should know what you're up against.
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the year, if you said, you know, you're sitting in fourth within the last month of the season, I would have taken that. But, you know, on a form, from a form perspective, I feel like we're a little bit off the mark on where we need to be to be competitive in the finals and even to secure a finals place. So, yeah, I think it's a bit each way at the moment. But, you know, the good thing is that we're, our destiny's in our own hands, and if we're good enough, we'll take care of our business.
I was going to ask you about that, Simon, because you are fourth, but when I hear you in press conferences, and I feel like you're just a bit frustrated about things at the moment. Maybe an inconsistency thing, I'm not sure, but there seems to be more scope for improvement.
There is. What we need probably more than anything else is a settled lineup where we can actually just have the guys for, you know, 1 week in a row and get them healthy and on the floor. But, you know, it's just been one of those years where, you know, we've got three or four guys out at virtually every game. And, you know, Kiefer Sykes has been out for a long time. Dane Penaud's played 10 minutes on the season. Ryan Brockhoff can't get a break. It's just from a coaching perspective, it's frustrating because you want what's best for these guys. You want them happy and around the club and playing basketball. And we've not been successful in being able to put that together, you know, through reasons outside of our control, but it doesn't, you know, it's just, it gets frustrating. But, you know, you got to work with the guys that we have available, and there's still some very talented basketballers there. We just haven't quite had the chemistry in the last couple of weeks from the defensive standpoint.
So you're fourth, as I mentioned. Do you feel you're in the top echelon yet, or do you think that there's still improvement required before you can be in that conversation?
Oh, I think there absolutely has to be improvement required. We're not playing at a playoff standard by any stretch of the imagination, but the good thing is that the potential is there for us to get there. So, you know, we'll use these last nine games of the season to elevate our performances and get ourselves to a level that that we feel like we can be competitive.
So, what about the confidence and the vibe of the squad? I mean, you've lost four of the last five, which has put you on your heels a little bit. But as I mentioned, a pretty solid run home, hopefully from win-loss perspective. How's the vibe of the group, and have you had to manage that or change your routine a little bit just to keep it upbeat?
The vibe of the group's good. Really close-knit group, and I feel like we had a bit of a break this week. The guys had the weekend off, which was probably our first days off in almost a month, and I feel like they, you know, the guys came in on Monday and I was really refreshed. I think they're very thankful for the time out, and you know, hopefully that energises us for the game this weekend.
So, are you happy with Ryan Brokoff's impact in your team? Obviously, he was a big signing through the middle of the year, and much hyped in Australian basketball to have a player of his calibre back into the domestic landscape, let alone into the South East Melbourne Phoenix. Has he integrated as you thought he might?
Well, definitely from a playing perspective. You know, like Ryan had not played basketball for 12 months. He's 30 years of age, so there's always going to be that transitioning into the team, just from a basketball perspective, and him getting his legs and making sure that we brought him along nice and slow. And we did that, and then he struck some form, and then he got injured, and then, we haven't seen much of Ryan since. I think he's played 7 minutes in the last month. So, yeah. You know, he got the hit in the head last game, and unfortunately there's been some repercussions from that, so I don't know when we're going to see him back.
Right.
Yeah, so we're still waiting on some results there from the doctors, so, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Brad Johnson joins us on a Thursday morning. He's our Thursday morning specialist on The Breakfast Club. It's great to have him part of our team in 2021. He's back again. Jono, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. How are you guys?
We're going well, thank you. Have you been to the Bull? Have you ever done a Bull carnival?
No, I've never been to the Bull. So my father-in-law has a couple of times, but no, obviously know a little bit about it, Half, but never actually ventured down there to watch the racing.
You're halfway there, John. It's a day trip.
I know, that's the thing. I'm only a couple of hours away, so I just don't have the time, Half. You know, I'm really busy these days.
That's true. You are saving the world one chest garment at a time at the moment.
That's it. One Xena vest at a time, mate.
What have you seen so far, John? We're a third of the way through the season. What have you seen? What's caught your eye in the world of AFL footy?
Oh, there's well, plenty, to be honest. It really is the fluctuations in, you know, performance, but in a positive nature, I'm talking, Half. Any game we go into now, it can turn, you know, within quarters, within halves, and I think that's the good nature about where things are at. You know, I I suppose the Gold Coast Suns are a prime example last week, getting to the MCG, taking on the Pies and doing what they did in a game that I didn't expect them to win. I thought Collingwood would just have the talent to get them across the line, and it's taking a bit more than that, we understand. And Gold Coast, for me, was a huge win. North Melbourne, what they did with Melbourne last week for a half. And then basically in that third quarter, they made some their own individual errors, North Melbourne.
Horrible.
Which gave Melbourne two easy goals and got them back and the momentum swinging their way. Like Jack Zeeble, just if he had taken that mark, Fritz wouldn't have kicked that goal. And little things like that. So you see that North Melbourne have just had a bit of a shift in their performance the last couple of weeks. Hanging in there longer, going to make it difficult for teams, you know, in certain patches of the game. So I like that. You know, we know where the good teams are at. We know what teams are going to battle it out this year. But from that depth point of view, I think that's important for the season now in those teams continuing to improve week in, week out so that games don't become blowouts.
Jono, the Bulldogs play Carlton this Sunday. I'm interested in your thoughts on the Bulldogs last Friday night. I know it's a while ago now, but just in what they would have learnt out of that themselves. My gut feeling watching the Dogs was that they played home and away football, and in the second half, Richmond played finals football. I might be being a bit harsh, but I'm interested in what they would have learnt out of what happened in the first half versus what happened in the second half.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good assessment, Whitey, in terms of the way that they did go about things. But when you look at even the first half, Tom Lynch kicks 4 points, I think it was, maybe even five behind. So Richmond probably should have been in front at halftime. So I think it's more the total game from the Bulldogs. Yes, they got some freedom. Yes, they got the ball out wide. They did have some pretty strong entries going inside forward 50. But overall, I think Richmond pretty much controlled the majority of the game, especially with their ball movement going forward and putting the Dogs' defence under consistent pressure. They just couldn't score. They just couldn't, you know, convert. So in the second half, they converted. They converted in a big way. Their ability to... I think the Dogs lost their shape, which is the one thing that they will look at closely, Whitey. And I'm talking when Richmond just had the ball in their forward half of the ground, time in forward half, and the Dogs just were bombing it out rather than trying to run it out. Their forwards got way too high. So when they did have to kick it under pressure out of defence, it was just coming straight back in, because we know how well Richmond's defence set up behind the ball, especially with Hooley and Grimes and the way that they lead the Tigers in that fashion. So I think that's what the Bulldogs will learn, the fact that they just, if the game isn't going their way, they've got it back in their mids and defenders. The forwards can't get pushed too high. They need to reset so that they can actually compete when the ball does come out of defensive 50 for them.
No coach wants to lose, but from a Luke Beveridge perspective, considering how many wins they've already banked, was it necessarily a bad thing because it gives him a lot to work with? And even particularly from a defensive point of view of maybe how the taller Richmond players got a hold of the Dogs' defence, it just seemed that there's a lot to learn from that Luke Beveridge might not necessarily be disappointed about to have that happen to them now.
Oh, no, the full assessment would have been perfect for Bevo coming off that. Look, you don't wash over anything when you have a win. You sometimes even try and drill down a little bit more. We've experienced that before where you're on a really good run and things are going really well, but it's not until you lose that you can really identify some other things that think, well, hang on a second, we're not going as well as what I am as an individual or what we are as a team, especially in that review process. So the loss can certainly do that. I think the assistant coaches might have spent a few more hours coding this one rather than getting just through the win and enjoying that side of things. So without question, this just allows them to restructure, straighten things up a little bit after a loss, and now have got plenty to work on leading into the next few weeks.
Half, just a text coming, it's probably for both of you, around the Bulldogs' key defenders. Is that a concern? We know how good their midfield is, and their forward line's pretty good as well. Is that a concern, or is it too early to tell?
I think their key defenders are fine. I mean, matchups got them last week. Look, I think Tom Lynch and Jack Riewoldt are two of the hardest key forwards in the competition to defend, and you need really good defenders, or you need, Jono, you need really good source pressure to make sure that any ball coming in is ugly and yuck, and they've got to work their backsides off to get possession. I don't have any issues, and I think what your point before, Whitey, is probably the most relevant one for the Bulldogs going forward. They learn enormous amounts about what happens against Richmond and what happens in big games on the back of what happened Friday night. I think they actually benefit from the loss. you know, too often benefit from the loss. But I think the Bulldogs will be capable of benefiting from the loss and being a better team on the back of what happened last Friday night. So the key defenders, one-on-one, they're not, it's not Glenn Jakovic and Steve Silvani floating back there. but, you know, they do their job, and if they've got the right pressure further up the field, then, which is what their whole game is based upon, then they'll be fine. But easy ball coming into any forward 50 or any forward half of the ground, Jono, is tough to defend, doesn't matter who you are.
No, that's right. I think Alex Keith has had a very good year, actually. I think he's been continually improving as a player, and he holds them up. It's probably that with Garden not in the side, I think Zane Cordy is the one that they want to really try and find some form again. He didn't play that well last weekend, and premiership player. So I think he's the one that they may look towards that needs to find some serious form over the next couple of weeks to try and assist in the air in particular, because he does read the play really well, Zane Cordy. So if he can recapture some of that type of form that we have seen in the past, then that'll definitely assist someone like Alex Keith, who's trying to hold down the defensive post at fullback.
That third quarter, though, was quite extraordinary. 23 minutes of no possessions in your forward half.
Yeah.
Like, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable footy. The fact that they could not get it out because Richmond had set up so well. But you're right, John. I couldn't agree more with what you said before, that they just lost all their shape, pressed way too high and had nowhere to go. So there's actually no point winning the footy because you can't do anything with it. There was no element of control.
They're always going to be good enough to win the ball back in the back half.
Yeah,
they've
that's
proved
right.
that over time, the Bulldogs. It's just that
them in.
You can't do that to Richmond. You can't do that to any team, in particular Richmond, who are the very best at it. And we've seen that over the last few years. You just cannot leave their defenders to sit back by themselves, because you'll have Bolter doing what he does, and he'll just bomb it back in high anyway. Grimes will just control things and set them up. Hooley's got class and will step and hit short, so or long. So you just can't. You've got to man those guys up. And you've just got to back in that you will win that ball back in that point. Or, you know what, half, it's not too bad. If you have one kicked against you, it resets structure.
That's right.
So it's actually not too bad in that situation to have one kicked against you. So you can actually then reset, compose yourselves, and then get your structure back in the way that you want to play your footy, and go back to that centre bounce and, you know, try and get it going your way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Trust your mids and your defenders to win the footy back and just have a presence forward of the footy and you'll be fine.
Yep.
Get it back into control rather than chaos. Richmond want the ball in chaos. That's what they feed off. They love the chaos ball because their pressure's so pronounced. But they'll learn a lot, the Doggies. I reckon Richmond are the winners, but I think the Bulldogs win out of that too.
Yeah, and look, as I said, I know that it happened last Friday night, but I think, I hate to use the word, but there are key learnings to come out of that game for both teams. And, you know, as a couple of text messages that have come through here, I mean, Richmond didn't have a lot of their key players, you know, Vlosten, Martin, Prestia, Lambert, etc. The Dogs didn't have Dunkley either, and I think that's important to recognise as well. I just think that...
It's not quite Vlosten, Martin.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
What about that, though? Lambert's an absolute star in the competition.
Yeah.
Here we are, actually. That's a great text, because ultimately... They would have beaten the Dogs by 100.
No, but this is my point, Jono, about the Dogs, is that if they can't beat Richmond now, how are they going to beat them later in the year? Now, yes, you get learnings out of it, but I'm just interested in what they're thinking, what the coaches particularly are thinking. Hey, geez, you know, we got them at such a good time, and we couldn't do it, especially after, you know, getting a good start, at least on the scoreboard. Richmond got all these players to come back, or whether they go, we're in front at half time. We know how to beat them. We'll be okay. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's huge, especially with those players that you know, weren't playing in the lineup for the Tigers. So it would add an element of doubt going into the next game if those players are there. We couldn't do it last time, but now they're even stronger again. So it's that's the challenge. We've said it from the start for the Dogs. Can they be a top four team? They haven't been able to achieve that at all under the guidance of Bebo. They've won the flag, but they've never been top four team.
Yep.
So to do that, they've got to start competing better against, you know, the very best out there.
No, it's a fair point. Just a release come through from Warrnambool, just off topic a little bit, but an important one. The Warrnambool Racing Club has been advised of a COVID-19 community case in New South Wales, which we heard of yesterday, and a subsequent list of public exposure sites published by New South Wales Health. Any person who has attended a COVID exposure site or reasonably suspects that a close contact has done so is not permitted to attend the Warrnambool race meeting today. The Victorian Department of Health has declared these New South Wales sites as Tier 1 COVID exposure sites. Any person who's been to a Tier 1 exposure site during the times listed must get tested immediately isolate, and contact the Victorian Department of Health at 1300 651 160. 1300 651 160. The internet can help you with those tier one sites and those exposures in New South Wales, which you may or may not have come across. So if you have, you can't go to the Bull, and you need to get tested and isolate and contact the Department of Health. A bit of a release from the Warrnambool Racing Club today. David and Karen wants to talk about the Bulldogs with you, Western Bulldogs champion Brett Johnson. Hello, David.
Good morning, Half. Listen, Whitey was talking about the Richmond players out injured, which I understand and agree with. Terrific players. But everyone seems to be forgetting the Bulldogs had 8 players out sitting in the grandstand. 8. 5 of them are absolute certainties. They're absolutely very important for the club. 2 of them hopefully will come back this week, English and Van der Meer. And they've still got players like Williams, Dunkley. Williams is last year rated the top 5 backmen in the competition. Dunkley.
Yep.
There's a number of who are still, out. So the Dogs, in fact, structurally, the Dogs had some very important players out. In fact, the most important player I think they had out was English, because the structure of the forward line and the whole ruck division fell apart. At one stage, they had Bontempelli, Bruce, Shacky. It was Benny Manning's dog was in the ruck, which is
Yeah, so Dunkley, English, yep. McLean, Jong, Vandermeer, Williams. Ed Richards is getting some love from some other clubs seemingly
probably,
at the moment.
Probably Williams is the big one, Half, I think. He'll be missed in terms of what he was providing and building from a season from halfback. Extremely important to their run and drive, no question. Dunkley, of course, with what he does in the middle of the ground and little one percenters, the smothers and the tackles that he's really built into his game this year, Tim English, from that forward point of view. So, look, I suppose by the time we get going, come back half of the year, hopefully Hugo Hagen's had a taste. Hopefully he's starting to find his way and really gets a good look in the second half of the year for the Dogs. I really think that he could add that flexibility. Shacky just came in and didn't offer what English had in the first 6 games of the year with a chance that that he had on the weekend.
Now, this Hugo Hagen thing, this is becoming an interesting part of the whole narrative of the Western Bulldogs season. Luke Beveridge gets asked about it every week. He was an emergency last week, so journalists are quite right or quite within their rights to ask about him again this week on the back of a loss. And Luke was a bit testy last week when talking about it post-game. What's going on with this number one draft pick, Jono? You know stuff. Tell us. Don't hold back from our listeners.
Half, I wish I did. Actually, I want to go and I'm going to make an effort in the next couple of weeks if he's still playing twos. I'm going to go watch him live. So then I get a true assessment of what he's doing work rate-wise and all those sort of aspects of things that that come into him then stepping up to being a regular performer at senior level. We did his game a couple of weeks ago with Fox, the VFL game. He kicked 5. But it wasn't a dominating 5, if that makes sense. It still kicked 5.
No, it was a lazy. Brilliant. It was lazy. Yeah.
It was. Well, it's probably not even kicking 5's a great effort, but it just didn't have that power to the performance that I think we would have sort of expected. If Hugo Hagen's kicked 5, you've gone, well, he must have played unbelievable. Well, it wasn't an unbelievable performance to do that. So I think that's the growth in his game that I think Luke Beveridge is trying to get to. The fact that if he steps in, he needs to step in and have an impact from the outset. So, look, he's gone from not being an emergency, Bevo's played it well like that, to an emergency. He's not far away. And he's just got to continue to perform to get in. It's okay. Take your time.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I'm surprised at the commentary around this because, yes, he's kicked a 5 and a 4 and a couple of other reasonable sort of games. But a few of those are Joe the Goose's over the top and Bulldogs winning by a big margin. But it also proves that the Bulldogs are a good team and they've got a good forward line at the moment. And so you don't just have to put him in because he was the number one draft pick. It's a luxury to be able to get him developing at the level below because the team, the senior team, is doing so well.
Well, one of the things...
I was just going to say quickly, Riley Tilthorpe in Adelaide wasn't playing great sample football, got a game at senior level and showed the footy world that this guy is ready to compete at the very top. Better ball movement coming to him, all those sort of things, which just allowed him to shine. I think Hugo Hagen would fall into that boat if he did jump into the Western Bulldogs forward line, because the type of ball and the movement that would come towards him would be a lot more fluent again than what he is getting at the moment. So I think the step up for him won't be that difficult. It's just pushing the button at the right time to bring him in.
The other thing on Jamara Ugal-Hagen is most number one draft picks, Jono, go to the bottom team or close enough to the bottom
really
team.
Point.
And because they're the bottom team, they're not very good. And they need number one draft picks and talent to come in and play the game straight away. So we see them more prominently in the teams that finish at the bottom. This isn't the case with the Bulldogs. They got him through a little bit of a quirk in the system, through the academy structure, and they got access to the number one pick on the back of it. So they were already a good team. They didn't necessarily need the number one pick to come in and show everyone how good he is.
It's a great point. And the other part of that too also is that, and that doesn't go on the scoreboard. It's a great point, but it's not a great question.
Yes. Now, I think, Whitey, you know what, Whitey? I think every listener's just given half a standing ovation.
Yeah.
That was... That is going to be replayed for the entire weekend, the rest of the year. That was the best comment of the year around at half. No one has said that yet. Well done.
Well, look, I have some moments.
But the other part of that though, Jono, is that also a lot of, generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, the number one draft pick not only is what half's saying, but is often a midfielder, and they're ready to go quicker than what a key position player is as well. Now, Jamara could potentially play on a wing or a half-forward flank or whatever, but the taller players do generally take a bit longer to furnish, whereas, you know, Sam Walsh can go in and a McGrath can kind of go in straight away and play a midfield role.
Yeah, and that's right. And you look at... I looked at some of his highlights from his under-18 year, his draft year, and it was phenomenal, some of the things that Hugo Hagen was doing, his athleticism, marking the ball over packs, doing all those sort of things. Haven't seen that yet. Haven't seen it at VFL level. So there's a lot of things in his game that spark needs to sort of try and come back consistently. And I reckon Bevo will push the button as soon as he sees it.
So we saw yesterday, Jono, Melbourne announced a 7-year deal for Christian Petrarca. A couple of questions on the back of that for you. Do you like a 7-year deals, especially at massive money? And if you're the Western Bulldogs, while we're on the Dogs, is that what you do with Marcus Bontempelli? Do you lock him away as a dog for life with this deal that's coming up at the end of the season?
Definitely lock him away half. Don't let him go anywhere. I think that's I like big deals. Half, if we're still playing and the club said it's a 7-year deal, 100% you'd
where do I sign?
We'd be all over that. So although I think the big Alistair Lynch signed a 10-year deal, didn't he, at Brisbane, and in the end he was getting well and truly underpaid. So
he was. He got stitched.
That was a bit of an issue. But that's the only aspect of the 7-year deal. You can sort of see that it's a great deal and sets, you know, Christian up for life and basically keeps him at the D's forever, which is great. Same with Toby Green at GWS. But I think 7 years is too long. One for the player and two for the... For that aspect of, you just don't know what 7 years in 7 years' time is going to be like, unless it's written into the contract that things are assessed based on where the competition's at. But it's not going to go down if the competition's not going as well in 7 years' time. So I think it's a risky move to do that for a young player. I would say 4 years would be the ideal sweet spot, because after 4 years, if you're flying still, you're going to get another four anyway on the back of that. So
I'm with you.
I think 4 years is about right in terms of where contracts should sort of sit for these gun players in the competition.
Is there any element of nervousness about the fact that Bontempelli hasn't committed yet, or are you 100% comfortable?
No, I'm 100% comfortable with the Bond. He's always been pretty calm and calculated with the decisions that he's made in his contract so far. That doesn't look like it's any different at the moment. I think he'll lock things away in the time that suits the Bont, and that's the way it should be. When it comes to these guns in the competition, the absolute very best players, it takes time. There's a number of layers that go into the contracts. It's not just 7 years and there's your money. There's a lot of other things that come into play for these gun players. So it does take a bit of time, and that's just the nature of, I think, what's going on with the Bont at the moment.
No fears for the Bont. He'll be a dog. He loves the Dogs. We know that. He's coming in next week. Coming in next week, so we'll really grill him on that.
Grill him.
Really make him uncomfortable, John.
Please, nah, don't make him uncomfortable. Keep him nice and calm. And nah, he's a star captain and absolutely dominating. So he's a true red, white, and blue.
Brownlow medalist Tom Mitchell from the Hawks joins us again on a Thursday morning. Good morning, Tom.
G'day, Half. How are you, mate?
I'm going very well, mate. How are you tracking this week there at the Hawks? It was a pretty disappointing performance last Saturday night.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? We weren't too happy with the performance we put out there. And, the Saints were obviously just way too good for us on the night. We didn't come to play and, we expect a better response this week.
What's Clarko like in those reviews post-game, and more so when you get back to the club, I imagine? He clearly knows that it's not a premiership list just at the minute. He's said that publicly, so that's pretty straightforward. But when there's a performance like that where St Kilda did dominate pretty much from start to finish, Mitch, did he get a bit more forensic, a bit more animated, or is he pretty level all the way through?
Yeah, this week was probably a little bit more stern, and I think it was probably what the group needed, to be honest. We'd felt until the weekend that we'd been pretty competitive in pretty much every game we'd played. We obviously hadn't converted every game to a win, but we'd been thereabouts in each game. And obviously, as you mentioned, this game we were just blown out of the park from the first quarter. So we weren't ready to play and it wasn't good enough. And yeah, we got a good talking to this week, which was, I think it was deserved. And I think the boys will be ready to go this week.
So what happened? What did you put your finger on at the end of it all?
Oh, it's hard to say. I think St Kilda had been under a fair bit of pressure as well, so they obviously had a lot on the line to play for. It probably didn't help that we had a bit of experience go to the team as well.
Yep.
O'Meara, Wingard, Burgoyne, not that that's an excuse, but that was, they're obviously key players for our team. And, yeah, we were just outplayed, really. It happens every now and then where you just clearly get outplayed. And, that happened to us on the weekend.
Jack Scrimshaw, Tom, is finally just starting to live up to the type of player that we all knew that he could become. He's really starting to settle into senior footy. He was as a youngster, he was the top 30 in the country in terms of AFL Academy level. So finally starting to get a good run.
Yeah, he is. He's a very talented player. As you mentioned, he was an early draft pick and was obviously up at the Gold Coast the early stages of his career. And yeah, I think, the way he performed on the weekend, he was one of our shining lights. But he reminds me a little bit of Grant Birchall, actually, off half-back, that left foot. He's a sort of tall half-back who can intercept mark the ball and can play on smalls or talls and, uses the ball really well. They're probably his strengths.
Tom, do you see that? Do you see now with what Jack's produced last week, and we know the other youngsters that you've got in the lineup, from a senior player point of view, do you see that it can turn over as the season progresses, but more importantly, over the next 2 or 3 years for the Hawks?
Yeah, I think so. I think not just Scrimmer, but, players like Cozzy, who's, I think he's kicked about 8 goals the last 2 weeks. CJ, obviously, he's run off half-back. Dylan Moore, there's little glimpses everywhere of guys that are stepping up, taking their game to the next level. And as a senior player, that's really promising to see that growth around you. And, yeah, I'm sure it's going to get even better throughout the year and over the next few years as well, as you mentioned.
I don't mean, Tom, to bring back the game from last week, but I'm interested in your role as a midfielder in the engine room, how quickly you can detect that things are off. Because obviously the start was awful on Saturday night. When are the sirens going off in your mind that it's just not feeling right?
On the weekend, I feel like probably the first 10 minutes of the game, we were only one goal to zero. So in terms of the very initial response, it wasn't too bad. But with a young group, we've noticed that we've had these lapses in games where mid-quarter, when we don't have a chance to reset at, say, quarter time, we're finding it difficult to find a response mid-quarter and, I guess, losing concentration at points in time. So it's probably the mid-quarter stuff when you don't have, a quarter time or a stoppage in a game to really reset that we need to be better at. And I think that'll come with maturity and guys just having more awareness that, when we're under the pump in moment, we can't, stop the game to reset. We need to be able to do that in the moment.
Yeah, it's a good point. I must confess, I was watching that game thinking you almost needed a timeout just to reset. So you as a senior player, is there anything you can do apart from get the ball a lot? To try and change things a little bit? Like, can you go to the bench potentially earlier than what you would normally and have a chat to the coaches? Or how can you change things out there?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're definitely aware of it and we've tried a few things. Obviously, hasn't always worked. There's been games where we have, found ourselves, I think Essendon round one, maybe Freo, not sure what round, but we have these big six-goal swings against us, and when we can reset, we find a way through it. But yeah, we're figuring our way through this one. It is a funny one, so we're trying a few things around the way we play, the way we use the ball in those moments, the way we defend, a few trigger words to get us back on task. So we're trying a few things at the moment. Hopefully some of them start to click.
Whitey mentioned getting to the bench early and having a bit of a chat. McClarko was there on the weekend. He sort of mixes when he's up in the box and down on the ground. What do you get out of Clarko when he's on the bench, Tom, just for our listeners? What's it like when he's on the bench?
Yeah, I think he's just sort of a calming voice. Sometimes when you're under the pump, you do look to your coach for a bit of guidance, and I think he probably just felt that this was a game in which we needed that a little bit more. So, he obviously spends majority of his time up in the coach's box, but when he does come down, he sort of can give that direct feedback of what we need in that exact moment, and, generally the message does get across a bit quicker.
I also noticed sitting on the bench was your brother Sam. Who is these days, of course, coaching the Box Hill Hawks, Sam Mitchell, and still doing his role on game day with you guys. When things are happening like they were on the weekend and we're losing the taps and not being able to get the ball out of the middle, do you talk to Sam about that? Does he talk to you about what you might be able to do on the fly?
Yeah, I think it's not just Mitch and Clark. It's our whole coaching group. They're doing a pretty good job. They're a pretty well-connected group, and I think having a coach on the bench just helps facilitate all the messages, and the communication is a lot stronger. So I think it is important to have a coach at ground level. And then, as I mentioned, you can get feedback a lot quicker and hopefully go out there and do something about it when your next opportunity to go on the ground is.
Tommy, I know when you look forward, you got the West Coast Eagles this weekend at home. Then you go North, the Blues and the Suns. Could get on a pretty good run here, especially starting this week against the West Coast Eagles, who were good against Freo, but they don't travel that well.
Yeah, there are some games, that we'd like to, try and get some wins. We're not going to shy away from that. But, at the same time, we can't look much further ahead than this week. We're pretty disappointed with last week and need a bounce this week. So, we won't look too far ahead. There's some games before the, I think there's four games, as you mentioned, before the bye. So if we can win a couple of them, it really helps shape our season.
One of the shining lights of the Hawks you mentioned before is CJ for the season. He's been absolutely dynamic. And I'm not sure if you noticed it or if it happened or if I'm just seeing things myself, Tom. But I reckon the Saints put a bit of time into him and tried to restrict his dash from the back half of the ground. Do you think the teams will start to do a bit more of that because of the explosion and the capability he's shown this season?
Yeah, you'd think so. He's performed pretty strongly all year, really. I think there was a stat going around, it might have been the first five games he'd polled coaches' votes in every game. So I think, if the coaches are recognising the influence he's having, and they obviously know the game as good as anyone, then I think teams will start to do that. He was a bit quieter on the weekend, but for the majority of the year, he's been pretty impressive. And I know that when we get the ball in his hands and he takes off, a lot of us can't keep up with him, but it's good to watch, and we want the ball in his hands.
Absolutely.
Now, I believe the Batmobile is going to be making an appearance at Waverley this week.
What?
No, I believe that is true, ahead of celebrations around a 30-year premiership reunion when the Hawks beat the Eagles. Is there going to be... It's true.
Yes.
Batmobile.
The Batmobile.
Tom, you have to get out there, Tom, and have a look at this car go around the ground.
Yeah. Is Clarko going to bring any of this sort of history and into the game to try and fire you up for this week?
I'm not sure if it'll be to fire us up, but there are some actual... there's some past players coming into the club today, actually. So I think Gary Ayres is coming in to chat to the group, so I think it's important to stay connected to the history of the club. I'm not sure what this Batmobile thing is, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Hang on a second. You don't know about the Batmobile?
No idea.
Oh, Tom.
What year were you born?
93.
Well, there's a reason.
That's why.
Now, you can ask someone today at the club, an old person, they'll tell you about the 91 Premiership and the Batmobile that was a part of the pre-game entertainment with Angry Anderson singing songs out of the back of this big bloody car. It's hilarious. You'll love it.
I'm looking forward to that one.
You'll love it. It's part of Aussie Rules folklore, the 91 Batmobile, Tom. That'd be good. Do you like the past players and the connection you talked about? Do you like seeing them around, and particularly the ones of prominence? It's like Gary Ayres, you mentioned, being able to have a chat and just reflect on the history of the footy club.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's so important, you know, to respect the people that have come before you and laid the foundations for, you know, for us to be at a great footy club. So I think we're spending an hour or so with some of the past players this morning, and I'm just going to bounce some questions off them and sort of what they loved about the club, and just get what we can out of it, and hopefully we can make them proud with the way we perform this weekend.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.